The headlines: the US, the UK and Australia announced a security pact that will help Canberra build the nuclear-powered submarines, a move that has provoked China's protest. Iran criticizes the UN nuclear agency for not taking a clear position on terrorist acts against the civilian nuclear facilities of its member states. Also in the headlines, rights groups say a new policing bill that is debated in the UK risks driving a wedge between police and members of the public. We'll have a report from London. Welcome to World News from our headquarters in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Top story this hour: the United States, Britain and Australia announced the formation of a security partnership that will help Canberra build nuclear-powered submarines. The partnership was announced by the leaders of the three countries in a virtual meeting. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said the submarines would be built in Australia in close cooperation with the United States and the UK. Morrison said Australia will not be fielding nuclear weapons and continue to meet its nuclear non-proliferation obligations. US President Joe Biden said the alliance would ensure peace and stability in the Indo-Pacific for the long term. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson asserted that the partnership would make the world safer. China also reacted to the alliance, saying countries should shake off their Cold War mentality and ideological prejudice. Political commentator Richard Baker says the formation of a security partnership to help Canberra build nuclear-powered submarines is declaring a Cold War against China.
If anyone had any doubt about what the purpose of this was, we had President Biden, who talked about the great friendship between the U.S. and the U.K. and Australia over a century, and all he cited were wars: World War I, World War II, the Korean War, I think he mentioned, the Gulf War, the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War. I mean, it was all references to war. I think making it clear to anyone who's trying to evaluate what they're seeing before them is that this is another step in the pivot to Asia, the U.S. policy, bringing more of its allies into the surrounding of China with military power, U.S. military power, and the power of its allies. And really, this is detrimental to the people of China, to the people of Australia, to the people of the United States. This is not needed in any way, shape, or form, but it's part of the step up in militarism, and particularly, as the Chinese representative said, this is the Cold War against China threatening to become a hot war.
For the first time since the Taliban took power in Afghanistan in mid-August, the first Iranian commercial flights have landed at Kabul International Airport. Amin Alami reports from Kabul.
Nowadays, landings of local and international flights in Kabul International Airport has turned into a familiar scene. On Wednesday, the first official flight of Iran's Mahan Airlines landed in Kabul since Taliban took over of Afghanistan in mid-August.
Iran's Mahan Airlines flight landed in Kabul International Airport with over a dozen Iranian passengers. It would return with tens of passengers, including Afghan nationals.
Earlier, some Qatari and UN-related aircrafts had resumed their flights to and from Kabul International Airport.
There is a Qatari aircraft landing here in the Kabul International Airport. According to Taliban sources, they are struggling to attract more foreign support, especially when it comes to managing the issue of Kabul International Airport.
In the meantime, the Taliban welcomed the resumption of Iran's commercial flights to Kabul, calling on international community to add to the number of their flights, bringing humanitarian aids to Afghanistan.
We welcome the resumption of the international flights, but the fact is our countrymen need urgent humanitarian aid. So I think the resumption of such flights paves the way for the regional countries and international bodies to send more humanitarian aid to Afghanistan.
Tehran was one of the largest donors at the 2002 Tokyo conference, pledging more than India, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, Norway, Switzerland, Australia, and Pakistan combined. Iran is also hosting around 3 million Afghans, including around 1 million refugees and 2 million undocumented migrants, according to the United Nations. Many of them have been residing for more than four decades. Kabul International Airport resumes its commercial international flights, while Qatar and Taliban are jointly managing all security and technical issues of the airport. However, Taliban officials here say they are working to make Kabul International Airport fully operational. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Iran has slammed as regrettable what it calls the International Atomic Energy Agency's silence about Israel's nuclear program. Iran's permanent representative to Vienna-based international organizations, Kazem Gharibabadi, was responding to a comment by an Israeli envoy. The Israeli official had said the IAEA has been in the dark about Iran's nuclear program for 7 months. Gharibabadi described the remark as absurd, as it came from a regime that isn't a member of any disarmament treaty. The Iranian diplomat noted that while Tehran is implementing the safeguards, the IAEA has had no information about Israel's nuclear program for well over five decades. And Iran says no one should expect the Islamic Republic to curb its peaceful nuclear activities while U.S. sanctions are still in place. Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency has criticized the European signatories of the nuclear deal for trying to switch the places of victim and violator. From Vienna, Homolesky reports.
Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency says until U.S. sanctions are not removed, no one should expect more forbearance from the Islamic Republic. Qasem Gharibabadi told the IAEA's Board of Governors, Iran's nuclear activities, including enrichment at high levels and production of metallic-based uranium fuel, are completely peaceful, under IAEA safeguards, and in line with the country's rights under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
They asked Iran to go back to the full implementation of its commitment under the deal. So I said, no, it's not possible. So our nuclear program will continue. And if there are some specific actions that we have taken and are going beyond and are beyond the JCPA provisions, we will suspend them only in case of lifting of sanctions.
Gharibabadi criticized the European signatories of the deal for refusing to condemn the illegal unilateral withdrawal of the U.S. Apparently, he said, they intend to switch the places of victim and violator. Talks between Iran and the remaining signatories of the JCPOA have not resumed since June. The aim of the negotiations, in which the U.S. took part indirectly, is to bring Washington and Tehran back into full compliance. Iran says the outcome of talks to revive the nuclear deal should be the effective and verifiable removal of all U.S. sanctions and guarantee that disastrous decisions like the U.S. withdrawal and violations do not reoccur. Iran also informed the board that one of the IAEA's equipment was destroyed in an act of sabotage, widely blamed on Israel, targeting an Iranian nuclear workshop. It's regrettable, Gharibabadi said, that the agency has failed to take a clear position on such terrorist acts against the civilian nuclear facilities of its member states. Homolesky, Vienna.
The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has begun reshuffling his cabinet, removing those ministers who have been seen as underperforming. Downing Street confirmed that Education Secretary Gavin Williamson, the Justice Secretary Robert Buckland, and Housing Secretary Robert Jenrick have left. Williamson was highly criticized for his handling of pandemic-related school closures. Dominic Raab has also been axed as Foreign Secretary and has been appointed Justice Secretary, replacing Buckland. Raab, who came under fire for the handling of the Afghanistan crisis, has been given an additional role of Deputy Prime Minister. A spokesman for Johnson said the goal is to put a team in place to deliver on public priorities The last major reshuffle came in February 2020 when Johnson axed around half of his cabinet colleagues following Brexit. Davina Taylor says British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is as much to blame for as his top ministers for underperformance on several issues.
Because essentially, the men who he's had carry the can in the shape of Gavin Williamson, the now ousted education secretary, for how COVID was handled in the education sector, well, you could say Boris and the rest of his team could easily have been ousted by that very reason. So the fact that one minister here gets to represent the ministerial departments that messed up during COVID is laughable, actually. The fact then that Dominic Raab, the man who seemed to have spectacularly mishandled the Afghanistan situation, well, where was Boris Johnson when that was also kicking off? So there's so many questions here about tinkering around the edges whilst Rome burns, because the timing of this is also incredibly crucial, and some might say slightly suspicious. After all, this is the evening that the Labour Party is debating the very serious case of the near £1,000 in universal credit that the very poorest will be losing, depending on how the government decides to push forward. So could this reshuffle be actually a move to try and get some of that attention away from what the Labour Party is trying to do here?
Staying in the UK, where a new policing bill is being debated that risks widening the wedge between police officers and members of the public, according to rights groups. Ahmed Cabello has more with this report from London.
Is the UK turning into a totalitarian state? Well, according to former British Home Secretary David Blunkett, they are certainly heading in that direction, with the proposed police crime and sentencing courts bill, which is being debated this week. He is not alone. 600,000 Brits put their name to a petition calling for the bill to be dropped, including 700 academics. 245 organisations have also called the bill an attack on fundamental rights, along with three UN special rapporteurs and the UK's Parliamentary Joint Committee on Human Rights, who called the bill, quote, oppressive and wrong. While there are many aspects of the legislation that has worried rights groups and advocates since the bill was proposed, there is one particular aspect that has recently began raising eyebrows.
The bill proposes to increase the sentence length for assault on emergency workers from 12 months to 2 years. On the surface, this may seem appropriate, but what some activists are concerned about is the way that this will disproportionately target people from ethnic minority backgrounds who are already significantly more likely to have force used against them than their white counterparts.
Dean alleges he was attacked by British police officers back in 2013 in the city of Manchester, but somehow found himself charged with resisting arrest.
But again, I'm 6'2", quite a big lad. Straight away, the police officer see my body as a weapon, and I got the whole, he's resisting. Next thing you know, I've got six police officers on my back, like punching me, kicking me, doing whatever. They can do things to people like me and people like you with the full knowledge that the law fully protects them. And even when, like I say, when I was basically attacked by the police, all of the officers who were there kind of corroborated the same story, which was false.
Marco, not his real name, has a similar story. He was at an anti-racist demonstration when police were seen attacking protesters, yet Marco found himself charged with assaulting emergency services. Marco asked us to distort his voice.
This was clear in court by the footages that the police were using disproportionate force, and there was no real reason for doing that. And they even confirmed that in their witness testimony in court. And it was incredible to see that they could just claim in court that they were just punching people in the face to stop them from going to Trafalgar Square. And this was used against me, ultimately, just because I was defending myself and those around me.
Ahmed Cabello, London.
Spain's Prime Minister and Catalonia's regional leader say their positions on independence remained very far apart. The two sides made their remark after Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez paid a visit to the region to resume talks aimed at reviving ties. Relations were badly damaged after Catalonia's failed 2017 independence bid. Regional President Pierre Aragonés demanded that Spain authorize a referendum on independence as well as an amnesty for everyone involved in the failed independence bid. Sanchez, however, said Madrid is opposed to both ideas. In October 2017, the Catalan regional government staged a referendum banned by Madrid and then issued a short-lived declaration of independence that triggered a heavy-handed crackdown by Madrid. Political commentator Leos Sazdi joined us earlier with his analysis on why Catalan independence will be unlikely in the near future. Take a listen.
The opinion polls show that the right, and that will be the popular party that is center-right and Vox, that is the right, I mean the left usually call it far-right, but it's not far-right, this is the right, the pure right, while the popular party, which has a majority in the opinion polls now, is the center-right. If they govern together, rule like in the autonomous region of Madrid or in Murcia, or in Andalusia, more Andalusia and Madrid, then, you know, the socialists lose the next elections. Pedro Sánchez can only stay till 2023, you see? So they set a date for a new referendum, but probably with the idea that we socialists are not going to be because in government, because we're going to lose, and then they leave the hot potato to the right, a new government made of the right and center-right. And then they would not allow the referendum, even if that leads to a small civil war or civil conflict. The right is never going to allow Catalonia to go its own way.
The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen claims the EU has achieved a lot because member states have stuck together. However, her State of the Union address in the European Parliament on Wednesday was met with a great deal of scepticism by lawmakers. That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight. The trade barriers that made the import of Marks and Spencer's Percy Pig Sweets one of the first casualties of Brexit has added an extra £600 million in costs to British importers since January, it has emerged. Customs duties paid by UK businesses shot up from £1.6 billion in the first half of last year to a record £2.2 billion in the same period this year, according to an analysis of HMRC data. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Lisa O'Carroll. The piece is titled, Brexit Trade Barriers Added £600 million in Costs to UK Importers This Year. Trade barriers that made the import of Marks & Spencer's Percy Pig Sweets one of the first casualties of Brexit has added an extra £600 million in costs to British importers since January of this year, it has emerged. Customs duties paid by UK businesses shot up from £1.6 billion in the first half of last year to a record £2.2 billion in the same period this year, according to an analysis of HMRC data. Percy Pig Sweets were among 2,000 food product lines that were hit by rules of origin regulations that came into force with the Brexit trade deal on 1st of January. In January, Marks & Spencer's raised the prospect of Percy Pigs being subject to tariffs in Northern Ireland because of the rules of origin. Although manufactured in Germany, they were first brought to the UK before being re-exported to Ireland, a journey that would now be subject to import taxes because the tariff exemption in the trade fell away as soon as they were re-exported. The scale of the impact of these complicated rules on importers is only emerging now and gives the lie to the notion that a free trade deal is cost-free to businesses. Since then, thousands of businesses have found they have to pay taxes if the product they are importing under the trade and cooperation deal is not sufficiently manufactured in the European Union. Trade bodies are reporting that some companies find the rules so complicated that they end up just paying the customs duties for ease of trading. Michelle Dale, a senior manager at accountancy firm UHY Hacker Young, said, British businesses weren't given enough time to help to prepare for the cost of Brexit or the masses of paperwork involved. The result is that the cost of tariffs and extra paperwork is now causing serious difficulties for many British businesses who are already struggling to stay profitable in the face of mounting pandemic-induced costs. The rise in customs duties paid is directly attributed to Brexit, as they were not payable on goods imported from the European Union while Britain was in the single market. Under a trade deal, goods that are majority made or processed in the European Union can be imported without customs duties, with slight variations depending on the product. The Percy Pig issue is still an issue more than 8 months on for importers. Across the board, companies are still having difficulties getting to grips with rules of origin, said William Bain, the head of trade policy at the British Chamber of Commerce. If the exporter cannot provide a certificate of origin, then importers may not be able to provide sufficient proof over the origin of the product. And some are then saying it's just easier to pay the tariff, he added. Fergus McReynolds, the director of the European Union and International Affairs at Make UK, which represents the manufacturers, said businesses are still grappling with rules of origin and what import duties are payable on. Fergus McReynolds added, "We didn't actually see the black and white of the text until Christmas Eve, and that didn't give companies a lot of time to understand the implications." There is some anecdotal evidence that some companies have found the process difficult, and in order to continue trading, they're taking the option of paying the tariffs for ease of trading, he added. The rules of origin do not apply only to raw materials, but also to products that are modified in a European Union country and contain ingredients or components from outside of the European Union. If it is not deemed to be sufficiently processed in that country, then they may not comply with the rules of origin, said Fergus McReynolds. Manufacturing Northern Ireland has also identified difficulties for local traders importing from the United Kingdom. Earlier this year, Stephen Kelly, the chief executive of the trade body, told a select committee of an automotive company that was buying axles from a German supplier. Under the special arrangements for Northern Ireland, which is observing European Union rules, tariffs should not have applied to that trade. However, because the axle was first sent to Britain for modification, the rules of origin exemptions did not apply.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us ponder on the words of wisdom from the Holy Prophet's elder grandson and second infallible heir, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace be upon him. Glory is to give in loss and forgive the sin, while chivalry is to safeguard the religion, promote the personality, be lenient, sustain in doing favors, fulfill the rights, and behave amicably with people.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
وإنما خرجت لطلب الإصلاح في أمة جدي صلى الله عليه وآله.
The words of Imam al-Hussein عليه السلام in dialogue.
صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, the son of the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, the son of the Lady of Light, the esteemed Fatima, the grandson of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, the beacon of light which guides towards certitude and conviction, the one who has eloquently said, "The person who likes you diverts you from wrongdoing, while your enemy will entice you towards disgusting actions." Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, the master of martyrs, these are his words. Imam al-Husayn's words in a suggestion to the Cameliers.
قال الإمام الحسين عليه السلام من أحب منكم أن ينصرف معنا إلى العراق أوفينا كراءة وأحسننا صحبته، ومن أحب المفارقة أعطيناه من الكراء على ما قطع من الأرض.
Any of you who may wish to change his way and join us in the journey to Iraq, we shall pay off his travel fare and he will receive our best treatment. And whoever favors leaving us, we shall pay their travel fare for the distance they have traveled up to here.
السلام عليك يا أسير القربات، السلام عليك يا السلام عليك يا أسير الكربات ويا قتيل العبرات. السلام عليك يا أسير الكربات ويا قتيل العبرات. أترجو أمتي قتلت حسينا شفاعة جده يوم الحساب. السلام على الخد التريب.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr al-Ruhani.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبنستعين. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله. When Imam al-Husayn al-Salam left Mecca, it was at this in the station at Tan'im in the vicinity of Mecca that he encountered a caravan, indeed a train of camels that were taking many goods from Yemen to Yazid in Damascus. At that time, Imam al-Husayn al-Salam confiscated all the goods that were taken by force, I mean forcefully confiscated from the people of Yemen to Yazid in Damascus. First of all, it must be indicated that Imam al-Hussein al-Salam confiscated all the goods in that train of camels, because the Umayyad hegemony never fulfilled the promise that they had made in the peace truce between Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba al-Salam and Muawiyah. And it was the right of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam to confiscate all those goods, not only for his own benefit, rather Imam al-Hussein al-Salam confiscated all the goods and distributed the goods among those people who deserved receiving them. This is an important point. And at the same time, Imam al-Hussein al-Salam indicated it to camellias who were over there, I mean to those people who were escorting the camel train, that in case they wanted to accompany him to Iraq, Imam al-Hussein al-Salam was ready to receive them warmly. However, in case some of them wanted to go back to Yemen, to their original point of departure, then Imam al-Hussein al-Salam was ready to pay them the fare of the journey in order to go back to their hometowns. From this we understand that when Imam al-Hussein al-Salam confiscated the goods in this way, he wanted to express his revolution and his being against the Umayyad hegemony. But at the same time, Imam al-Hussein al-Salam never wanted to commit even the slightest oppression against those people who had been paid to escort that camel train. From this we understand that Imam al-Hussein al-Salam intended to attract those camellias to himself because of his movement. Imam al-Hussein al-Salam knew well that his movement was the right movement, and in a right movement it would be absolutely pointless to commit oppression against people. True, and granted that those camellias were being paid by the Umayyad hegemony, but those camellias themselves were in need of money, and there were indeed some people who accepted that mission in anticipation of receiving that kind of money. So Imam al-Hussein al-Salam treated them in a very humane way in order not to commit any oppression against them. Rather, he treated them quite honorably and with due honor in order to continue his mission. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always.
Delight. floating concert venue has entertained music lovers in London. Renowned pianist Masayuki Tayama and his partner started the project to play on a canal boat traversing the city's waterways 2 months ago. Since then, they have performed 9 concerts, and their upcoming performances are already sold out in months ahead. The couple came up with the idea after living on a narrow boat with a digital piano.
This is the piano boat, which is the only canal boat of its kind. It was built to our specifications as a floating concert venue. So we have a brand new Steinway grand piano, and here we give musical experiences for people on the canals.
The artists believe the experience is very different from playing in regular concert halls. They say recitals on the boat create a unique interaction with the audience and it feels friendlier. Small fairy pigeon Vader has interrupted a cricket match in Ireland. A playful puppy ran into the field of a semi-final match and caught the ball. The scene caused laughter amongst those present. After a few minutes of chasing the dog, players managed to get the ball back. The funny video has gone viral on the internet.
A caiman and a local tour guide in Bolivia's Amazon region have formed an unlikely friendship with Bond going viral on the internet. Although people are warned to stay away from caimans, Alejandro Gil has struck up a friendship with one special reptile named Jesus. Despite the caiman's carnivorous nature, it shakes his tail and allows Gil to pat it on the head after being fed. At 4 meters long, Gil, however, admits that getting close to Jesus does still make him nervous.
My knees shake when I work with Jesus. I'm always scared and very careful, and also respectful to tourists. Guides in the Pampa de Yacuma and across Bolivia consult with tourists before undertaking an activity. If they agree with it, then we do it. If one person is not in agreement with an activity, then we don't do it.
Gil says they are only able to get in touch with a caiman in a dry season when the river is at low water levels. They lose the reptile in January when the river rises. Caimans inhabit Mexico, Central and Northern South America, from marshes and swamps to mangrove rivers and lakes. Their diet consists of a great deal of fish, but caimans also hunt insects, birds and small mammals and reptiles. A new initiative has been launched to turn the spotlight on the misery of Syrian refugee children. Little Amal, a giant puppet depicting a young Syrian refugee child, has arrived in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. This 3.5 meter tall puppet has traveled all the way from Syria to Turkey, Greece, and Italy. It will then go to France, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, and the UK to focus attention and the urgent needs of young refugees. Syrian refugees, especially children, are in a dire situation after being driven from their homes due to the conflict in their country. Archaeologists have discovered the largest ever bronze mask in an archaeological site in China's southwest Sichuan province.
This is a large bronze mask we unearthed from the central park of the number 3 ritual pit. The widest part, from one tip of ear to the other, is 136 centimeters, and the height is around 75 centimeters. It can be regarded as the largest bronze mask unearthed in Sanjingdui, and even the largest in the Shang and the Shu dynasties.
The mask was found together with other cultural objects such as ivory and bronzeware. These items needed to be removed first before handling the mask, which made the extraction process complicated. Restoration work is underway on the largest bronze mask taken from the site. The relic is believed to be thousands of years old, dating back to the Shu period. The site is an archaeological treasure mine belonging to the Bronze Age of over 4,000 years ago. The area was first discovered in China in the late 1920s. An Australian zoo has welcomed two baby bilbies, an endangered species. Their birth has brought joy and hope to zookeepers and wildlife enthusiasts. The baby bilbies were born in Taronga Zoo in Western Sydney. Zookeepers named the two male joeys, Molly and Cliff, after a national park that once was home to herds of this animal. The birth of the joeys has raised hope among the zookeepers of reintroducing the species to the wild. Bilbies were once found across 70% of Australia's landmass. They are believed to have inhabited Australia for up to 15 million years.
Chameleons changing color is one of the most fascinating traits amongst living creatures. Now, can't humans make a robot with the same capability? In a science lab in Seoul, a team of engineers have created a robot that mimics the color-changing ability of the famous lizard. The researchers have made the skin with a special ink that changes color based on temperature and is controlled by tiny flexible heaters. The head engineer says creating a wearable device that can actively change color and patterns was the main goal of the study.
The pattern of South Korea's military uniform is made for woodland and certain colors. So if you wear this military uniform and go to the desert, you can be easily exposed. Actively changing colors and patterns to match different surroundings is the key of camouflage technology, and we made this possible.
The total thickness of the flexible, multi-layered artificial skin is thinner than a human hair. The scientists envision that their research can be adapted for military uniforms to help soldiers blend into their surroundings. It can also be used for aesthetic purposes such as fashion, exterior of cars and buildings, as well as future display technology.
Visitors and staff of a French zoo have been amazed by the surprise birth of two African lion cubs. The babies, a boy and a girl, were born 2 weeks ago in Amnival Zoo. Their birth was unexpected due to their father's advanced age of 17. The cubs will live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. According to zookeepers, they are currently in good health. The Amnival Zoo has asked people on social media to name the newborns.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The German capital, Berlin, turns colorful as the annual mural festival has brought artists together to display their works around the city. Artists have instilled new life into neighborhoods with giant murals that attracted hundreds of visitors. This year's event was resumed under the motto Home Street Home after its 2020 edition was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Organizers say the paintings invite people to discover the city as a gigantic open-air gallery.
The Italian city of Venice has held its annual historical regatta festival, attracting hundreds of spectators. People wearing costumes rode their colorful boats and gondolas through the city's Grand Canal. The participants reenacted the city's history by carrying people dressed up as the King of Venice and his wife up the canal. Some of the riders also put their strength to the test by racing each other throughout the day. The regatta dates back to the 13th century and has been held every year in September.
An extraordinary concert has entertained hundreds of people in the German city of Dresden. Musicians performed underwater while five steamboats accompanied them with their whistles. The City Symphony Orchestra organized the event in an attempt to boost up people that is exhausted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Residents welcomed the program, describing it as a glimmer of hope. They believe that the unusual concert was good for heart and soul.
Young generations are becoming more concerned about our planet and seem determined to contribute to make it environmentally friendly. A great example is this Parisian boy who spends a lot of time fishing metals out of rivers and canals in the French capital. Good for him. 11-year-old Raphael uses magnets and grappling irons to fish metal objects out of the Seine River in Paris. Over the past 2 years, he has taken hundreds of bikes, scooters and shopping trolleys out of the water. The boy says the practice was initially a hobby for him, but it eventually turned into a reasonability and a method to raise awareness about climate and environmental issues.
My goal is to raise awareness so that a maximum of people do something. They don't have to do what I do, but at least do something. Even if it's not necessarily cleaning up cannons, it could just be picking up a cigarette butt.
Raphael has also fished some very rare items out of different canals, including handguns, pieces of jewelry, and an artillery shell. An exhibition is therefore being held in Paris where Raphael's findings are going to be put on display. The young environmentalist has also been awarded the Medal of Paris, a prize belonging to the residents who accomplish a deed concerning the city. Brazilian researchers have discovered a substance that could be used as a drug against COVID-19, and you may not like where they found it. A group of scientists have come across a potentially life-saving molecule in the venom of a kind of Brazilian pit viper. It is a peptide or a chain of amino acids that limited reproduction of the coronavirus in monkey cells by 75%. The peptide can be synthesized in the laboratory, so there is no need to capture more vipers. Now the researchers will evaluate whether the molecule can be used to create medicine for treating people with COVID-19. Thousands of cows have descended from their summer quarters in the Swiss Alps to enjoy the warm temperatures of lower heights. The cattle herds spent 7 weeks in the Alpine mountains, grazing at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters. Their journey down started before sunrise and took almost 5 hours to complete. The cows, which couldn't make the trek due to injury, had already been carried down using trucks and helicopters. Farming has found an alternative look in the Netherlands, where cows produce milk on an eco-friendly floating farm. That may seem a surreal image of Rotterdam, the largest port in Europe. A herd of cows peacefully feed on board of what is known as the world's first floating farm. They live on the top floor of the three-story farm, while their milk is turned into dairy products on the other two floors. The floating farm opened in 2019. The owners say it aims to show the future of breeding and farming.
You must realize that the world is under pressure. Therefore, we have less and less land, agricultural land. Our idea is that in this way, we can actually create agricultural land close to the city and also adaptable to the climate.
The floating farm is seen as a good alternative for normal farming in the Netherlands. That's a country with scarce land while being threatened by climate change. The farm's owners have also applied eco-friendly methods to make it durable and self-sufficient as much as possible. The methods include using solar panels and feeding the cows with grass from sports fields.
An Australian cyclist has become the first woman in history to pull off a front flip on a mountain bike. Caroline Buchanan landed the front flip at the OD9 cycling event in the German city of Birkenfeld. The maneuver won the former two-time Olympian the women's best trick title in the event. This was the first time the Nines featured a female category. The annual event gathers the world's best slopestyle and freeride mountain cyclists to Germany. A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In recent years, doctors and researchers have increasingly realized that many of those who survive an illness of any kind or who go through serious physical trauma are at high risk of a range of debilitating and chronic physical, cognitive, and mental health symptoms, problems that closely resemble long COVID. We now present you an article written by Megan Hosey, an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. The piece is titled, Post-illness symptoms like long COVID are probably more common than we think. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Recent months, long COVID has received a great deal of media and public attention. Research has found that as many as one in four of those infected with COVID, perhaps millions of people in the United States alone, suffer from chronic long-term symptoms, including headaches, dizziness, abdominal pain, heart problems, fatigue, anxiety, depression, cognitive impairment, and other conditions. It is a difficult and complex illness, and we must do much more to help those who are struggling with it. At the same time, it is important to realize that rather than being a strange, special case,